Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Welcome to The Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4, the secretly recorded Sex in the City numero uno season. My name is Tim Batt, and I am recording in Auckland, New Zealand.
I'm Guy. I'm in New York City.
This was an intentionally energetic intro from me, Guy, because we're on video chat. You are literally in bed. You're in a very low energy body position right now.
On bed. And I actually have just propped myself up. I was, as I watched the film, I watched half the film. This is the seventh screening, by the way, everyone. On a train from Philadelphia to New York. And then I watched the other half slowly melting into my bed here in New York. And when we started recording, I realized I was still in my sort of quite negative, quite laid back position. I had two pillows propping up my neck. And so I've gone into a slightly more physically ready and upbeat pose, not dissimilar to Kate Winslet in the film Titanic. I'm on my side. I am opening up my body language to you, Tim. It's not to say I'm happy, but
in
I'm doing what
kingdom
I can.
You'd be presenting. I am. Maybe I should do the entirety of the podcast in power stance, fists clenched, held above my head. This is what bigwig CEOs recommend you do before you go into a board meeting, because it gets the hormones juiced up, gets them all
true?
Nice and juicy for you. Yeah, absolutely.
Like you to keep your arms up for as long as possible. I hope you have your notes in front of you, because I don't want to see those arms coming down.
This may be a challenge. I've also got, just to add to the difficulty setting, a lovely little smoothie and a coffee that I've just made, and both of them will go bad in record time if I'm here with both arms above my head like a jackass.
Well,
the good thing is you can visually verify when I fuck this up.
I don't think you're going to. I have no reason to doubt that you, Tim Batt, a man who has shown nothing but pig-headed commitment to this premise time and again, absolutely has the guts and the gall to go all the way. No guts,
it's
no
so
glory.
Even right now, I don't want to be doing it.
Look at me. I'm just lounging. I got two pillows here on my lovely bed. And look at you, Mr. Power
Stance. I'm in power
stance.
I'm good to go. I'm ready to merge two companies into a conglomerate. Let's get it done.
Tell me about your screening.
Let's do a hostile takeover. I want to put my hat on because I can see myself and my hair's messy. I want to look good for you. Hands are where you can see them. How was the screening for me? Well, I did the old Timbo special of splitting the movie in twain, enjoying half of this delectable treat late at night next to my lovely wife in bed, because I think that this is a movie not to be consumed often in one chunk. You might choke on it. Real choking hazard on this thing. It's big. You get it in your mouth, you don't realize what you're dealing with. So I like to break it apart. First half was good, and then I couldn't really get to sleep afterwards. So you know what I did? I listened to the SpongeBob SquarePants musical on Spotify and mentally reminisced about old times when we went and saw it live on Broadway.
Yeah, that was a good night. You were what?
Your brain was so
a whir and a buzz from half of a Sex in the City 2 that you thought you'd take things down a notch by listening to the music of Bikini Bottom. Is this what I'm to believe?
It's kind of the opposite in that my brain was so starved of stimulus, it kind of started ramping itself up. Does that make sense?
Not a lot to me, but I mean, you are a unique specimen. To me, if my brain is
sure starting, am. I'm in power stance right now.
Do you think that you're the only person in power stance right now, or do you think that there are business people across the globe who are currently getting ready for a big meeting?
There's $75 billion worth of humans in power stance right now.
Jesus.
And it's less people than you'd think.
How many people? And what's your contribution? And what's your contribution to the $75 billion of net worth to those in power stance currently?
Unlimited potential.
And is that recognized by the other people in power stance, or is that something that you sort of have to constantly tell them you bring to the table?
We're lone wolves, baby. That's how people in power stance operate. We're sole operators. They're to grab the world by the short and curlies, if the short and curlies were about a foot above our heads, because that's where our hands are.
That's right. So, as we were, you watched half the movie, you listened to the...
I'm done with power stance.
No, 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 no. Thank you. Stressing me out, putting your hands by your side. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. If I make noises like that, dear listener, rest assured, nothing untoward is happening to me, save for Tim flouting his earlier statement and drinking alternating sips of his coffee and smoothie. The smoothie is a beautiful deep purple. It looks fantastic. So you listen to SpongeBob SquarePants, and then you fall asleep, or are you still awake?
Nah, I listened to a bit of Hamilton after that, and then yeah. I was reading... Read a little bit of my book, and then just sat there thinking for another while.
What?
Not so a great sleeper guy.
No. So what? At what point were you like, after you watched half Sex and City, you were like, I should go to sleep right now. And then you did three
It was almost like I can't take any more of the movie.
And then you did three different activities.
Mm.
How long after you finished watching Sex and the City did you go to sleep?
Who's to say? I don't know when I nodded off. Early hours of the morning, guy.
And then how much sleep did you get?
Not a ton. Not a ton. So
5 hours?
Goes, yeah, maybe slightly under that, I reckon. That's right, and that's enough to operate.
So then Zoe gets up, and do you start watching immediately, or do you...
fuck, power stance, man.
Put your hands up!
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm done with it, man. Mom's... They're aching. Oh, guys in power stance. He's found a way to position the mic. So he's like a boxing announcer. It's coming from the ceiling. In one corner. Weighing this, in.
It's not what they say. They always specify which corner. They are so good at that. It's one of the most important things. I want more details on your screening. So Zoe gets up. Do you also get up?
Absolutely not. I'm still in bed. Which is not a good way to do business.
And you start watching immediately in bed.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I must have interrupted it somehow as well, because you messaged me saying, hey, I'm going to be a little bit late because I'm on this train from Philly. You're in Philadelphia. That's amazing. Like the cheese guy. And I was like, I don't know how this has happened, but I am also running late. And I'm not quite sure, because I thought I managed my time pretty well for us to be arriving at the station at the scheduled slot on the timetable. Look, man, there's not a ton of detail to give you. I watched the same movie again. It's Sex and the City. Wasn't happy about it. I was all right with it last night, surprisingly. But
this is what I'm talking
not
about.
This morning.
Yeah, you were grumpy this morning. You sent me the same joke three times across two different mediums, Tim. Would you like to share that with the listener?
Who's hotter than Miranda Hobbs?
I don't know, Tim. Who?
Miranda Stove.
That's not the punchline you sent me.
Oh, what did I say? Miranda Oven. Fuck.
Yeah.
I fucked up my own joke.
You did.
Guy... What? Tell me about your circumstances for watching this film. It sounds like you were traveling very quickly.
Just pretty much just knew I had to get down to business. Bog standard, garden variety, first day at the office sort of job. I watched half of it on the train, Bluetooth headphones on, so surround sound audio. And then I had to, that was like, you know, that was an hour and a half train ride, so that was about right in terms of, it was relaxing, but then had to catch, you know, the metro to get home. And then just as soon as I got home, tucked straight back into it. Didn't really like it at any point, just scrolling through my notes to see if anything got me going. I tell you what I did enjoy.
What did you enjoy?
I managed to stay exactly where I was. This note's not. There was a small set. It's at the start of the movie, so all is well. Everyone's happy in their relationships. Carrie's bragging about their life in New York. And the last line of her voiceover is, before we see her with Mr. Big, is, "And I imagine to stay exactly where I was, in love." And then in the original motion picture soundtrack, you hear a saxophone line, and I've written it in parenthesis here so I could recreate it for you, but obviously I didn't write it as music. I just wrote the words, do-do-do-do-do. And it's something along those lines. But I thought it was fun. I imagine the player of the instrument sort of being like, "Ah, oh, this isn't the hardest note I'm going to play. It's not the most exciting melody, but I can see how this will be deployed in the film, and I'm happy to put my my artistic integrity on the line for it."
Sounds like you might be dealing with a saxophone, maybe an alto sax kind of a sound.
Almost definitely.
The instrument. Yeah. I can't remember the flourish directly offhand, but it, like the mariachi band that I equipped you with last episode, this gives me a musical cue to look forward to in my next watch.
That's right. I also, I then got taken, I didn't get taken out of it. I started getting quite grumpy quite quickly after that, though. When they start looking around that penthouse apartment in the same building where they see that first dud, and Carrie starts doing one of her jokes, and I'm on the record as saying I'm not a huge fan of her comic sensibility, but that's not to say that it's not for, you know, she's built a career out of it. She's obviously got fans, and, you know, there's an audience for it, and all power to them. And she makes a joke when they're looking around the house. She sort of pretends to own it. She says, "Hello, I live here now." And everyone sort of smiles along. And
the
realtor,
on the balcony,
the greasy realtor says to Big, "Your wife has quite the sense of humor." And I was like, fucking say it to her. Laugh. Do anything except, like, just pretending she's not in the room and saying to Big, "Oh, wow, you got a real live wire over here." It's ridiculous. If, like, if you and I are in a room with a third party and you make a joke, that third party would never say to me, "Wow, your friend has quite the..." They'd go, "Oh, good one." It's fucked. Isn't it?
To be fair, I think in this... Nah, I think you're being too harsh on the realtor. In the staging of the room, Carrie's quite a way away, and Big is standing right next to the realtor.
He should have done this.
Sideline comment.
He should have done this then. "Good one!" You know?
"Great gig!
Great gig! I was just telling your husband that I think you've got a great sense of humour."
There's not even the line that deserves it. She, when she walks in and sees this penthouse apartment that is just absolutely stunning, she says, "Ah, oh, I hate it. It's horrible. It hurts my eyes to look at. That I enjoy every time," because she sells that to me. "And also, guy, I've got another third surprise drink."
Oh my gosh. What time is it where you are? It's like 10:20 a.m.
It is. This is whiskey from last night, but there's a bit left.
Yeah, good for you. Oh, those rock ice cubes you use, they're not cold right now. They're room temp.
They're room temp. The whole operation is room temperature.
Whiskey, of course. Well, whiskey's it can be drunk at multiple temperatures. It's a versatile drink. Isn't it?
Felt like you were going to go somewhere else with that. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I don't mind it at this temperature, actually. It's not too warm or anything. It's okay. Do you think I'm being uncouth by not having a chilled whiskey? No, people drink it without ice. That's a thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think it's totally fine. Mm. I think you know, it's a it's a heck of a palate you're running, or like a, I don't know if palate's the right word, but it's a heck of a lineup of beverages you're running there. I like multiple drinks in the morning as much as the next man, but 10:20 a.m. on a Monday, just neck and whiskey alongside your coffee and your smoothie, I mean, your body's going to be in all sorts.
Nah, I think I'll just be ready for any situation the day throws at me, especially if I can have 20 seconds to prepare. If someone gives me a heads up on what's happening, power stance, and I'm rolling in there, slightly drunk, highly caffeinated, and with all the vitamins my body could want or need. It's all liquids from here on in, guy.
You're off solids.
Yeah, I'm off solids.
Speaking of solids and, you know, diets, one moment that I felt tremendous empathy in the movie, the Bluetooth headphones doing a lot of heavy lifting when Charlotte, her tummy starts rumbling in Mexico. And look, without going into too much detail myself, I had what wound up being a pretty comfortable sort of, my tummy was making noises, and I was in a situation where I had to find a bathroom pretty quickly over the weekend. And thankfully I did. But the noises that my tummy was making, and then the sense of release that my body experienced upon sitting down, I felt immense empathy and fear, actually, for Charlotte when she was walking along and her tummy was going. And I was like, oh, I mean, it's not worked out for you before. It's certainly not going to work out for you this week. But my heart goes out to you, sister.
I had a deep think about that moment this week because I got to thinking about what the incubation period is for gastro. I was like, there's no way in how... The movie leads us to believe it's because she opens her mouth and gets the shower water in there and that's what causes it. It's not long enough. So then...
And no, and moreover, like, that is only... The people who watch this movie, the people who identify with Charlotte, like, Charlotte's entire notion that she can't eat the food in Mexico because it's going to make her sick, it's ludicrous, right? It's borderline ignorant. And then for her to then become sick by getting what, like, all the people who identify with Charlotte and, you know, think of her as the character to whom they most relate, when they see that happen in the film, then that's just going to, you know, perpetuate the fear they experience about holidaying in Mexico.
You think it's some bad role modeling by the film, huh? Doubling down on people's ill-founded fears. Here's what I was thinking, though, and this certainly won't help, this cause that you're describing. I reckon she's picked up the Ebola virus. And I think that you look shocked. That sound that you hear from your guts isn't the normal kind of tummy rumble. I think it's her insides liquefying, like her organs being turned to blood.
Look, you know, I don't want to cast doubt immediately on your bold statement, but... you know, you'd get the feeling that without any serious medical attention or none shown on screen, her body mounts a pretty spectacular comeback against what is, more or less as I understand it, a virus with a 100% fatality rate.
Yeah, you got it. And that's what makes it a miracle in the film and overlooked. Everyone gets their own miracle in this movie.
Who tell me Steve's miracle.
Steve's miracle is the gift of forgiveness. You know, the capacity for human forgiveness is truly a miracle, and he receives that gorgeous gift from Miranda. Samantha's miracle is she gets out of her cancer all good, gets the all clear.
That's
yeah, it happens
in this...
before the film, but it's in the world of the film.
Neither of these miracles hold a lot of water for me so far. Charlotte's is, if what you're saying is true, undeniably a miracle to contract.
How dare you doubt what I'm saying being true?
Suffer through and then beat Ebola over the course of 24 hours in Mexico is nothing short of a miracle. Carrie's miracle?
Well, what's more believable, guy? Who getting gastro in like 6 hours from an open mouth in a shower, or her being the one person who's ever single-handedly defeated the Ebola virus?
The first one is so much more likely. You couldn't even finish describing
it. It needs a longer incubation period.
Look, I'm not saying that, you know, the timeline laid out for gastro is 100% accurate. I'm just saying that it's more likely she got a little bit of an upset tummy. I just your definition of miracles is all over the map here, and also for stuff that's contained within the film. You're a mess.
I'm all right, mate. Anthony is a wedding gift. We have overlooked this fact week after week. Well, not really week after week, but episode after episode, because we are, packing these watches in. I don't think that you should treat a human being like that. It seems bad to me.
What?
And they just gloss over.
No.
That Anthony is a wedding gift. He's a human being.
No. He's not the gift. She doesn't get, like, you know, unfettered, unbridled access to Anthony. His services. He's the best wedding planner in town. This we know. He's getting paid all the same because Charlotte obviously, you know, Charlotte and Runkle, as part of the gift, have offered the services of the best wedding planner who, you know, probably at a cut price rate. I think it's very generous. I think everyone's making out like a bandit here.
It's the clunky wording of it that she says that he is the wedding present from Charlotte. I'm like, the man is not a wedding present. The man is a man. He's a human being. He's a person. You treat him with some damn respect. His services may be the gift. That's quite fine. But he is a human with his own agency and rights. And hopefully love, which we see in the second film.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because at the start of the second film, there's quite a lot made about the fact that Anthony and Stamford are getting married. And
it's a gay wedding, guy.
Yeah, well, obviously there's a big song and dance about the sexuality of the two parties involved in the wedding. But more specifically, I feel like all of the gals sort of speculating and gasbagging about there being some sort of tension or history of dislike or just you know, like, that they didn't get along.
Yeah.
But there's no body of evidence to suggest that at all in this film. I mean, maybe it's from the show.
Well, except that at the stroke of midnight on New Year's, they have to down a big bit of alcohol before they give each other a kiss.
That doesn't suggest they don't like each other.
It did to me. That's how I read it. They were like, oh, well, you're the person I'm standing next to. I better get briefly fucking hammered, just like I'm doing with my whiskey.
Enough to qualify how surprised they are at their marriage? I don't know. I feel like it's completely overblown at the start of the second. These are two people who just don't seem to know each other very well and slowly get to know one another in this movie. I mean, it would also appear, and again, this is probably a huge blind spot having not seen the series, that these are the only two gay men whose lives cross over in the universe of these characters, and so it's almost
which
a marriage of convenience.
Fucking crazy when you think about the lives that they're leading as cosmopolitan women of New York City.
Hmm.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Can I give you a shining light?
Yeah, I'd love it.
You know the bit where Carrie's trying on 600 wedding dresses? And yeah. During the shoot, there's quite a few people there. Samantha's there. Stanford is there. Charlotte is there. And there's a brief shot in addition to the photographer, who I get the sense is a real guy. Do you get that feeling that the photographer we see a few times, it's
yeah.
like, that guy's a person. He's a someone. He's not an actor. That's a real guy. There's like just one brief fleeting shot of a woman and a man who I guess are playing the part of like art director. And she's sort of got that look of like a pen half in her mouth, sort of like thinking and then pointing, sort of directing something out. And it's just such a big offer. And it's a lovely self-contained character piece. And every time I watch the movie, my eye gets drawn to her because I think she kind of overshoots what was required in that shot. It's like, we get it. You're overselling this.
Yeah, but those are the moments you really do wind up being drawn towards and enjoying. Those little flashes of overperformance that aren't cut down. Well, it's quite a glamorous movie, you know. My shining light this week was the seat in the therapy that Stephen Miranda go to. The therapist is also, I can't place her, but she's semi-famous. Whoever plays the therapist. She's
in a show, huh?
She's a character actor of some description, of note. But she's
in a big TV show.
She's dishing out advice to Miranda and Steve, and they're sitting sort of quite uncomfortably close together. Like, what they're sitting on is halfway between a seat and a couch. And I don't know if that's art department or if that's a therapy trick for couples therapy, where it's like you sort of force closeness upon the couple so that they can confront their problems head on. But it was very cunning. It was very sweet. I thought, what a ridiculous fucking chair. But then I also thought about the service of the chair. And I was like, well, you know what? I don't know who's in charge of this decision, if it's a therapist or a set person, but I like it.
You don't think that was just staging? Because you know how, like, when you're doing stuff for TV and film, you got to, like, be unnaturally close together because the camera kind of distorts the
Keep
distances.
An eye out for it, man. It's a weird size. It's neither a chair. It's too big for a chair. It's too small for a couch. What do you call that? A chouch.
Fuck, I don't know. You've got me there, mate. I can't find the relationship therapist. Oh, there she is. Her name is Joanna Gleason, Guy Montgomery.
Semi-famous
Get
name as well.
Joanna Gleason's a good name. She's a Tony Award-winning musical theatre actress. Let's have a look. She won the Tony for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Oh, no, she was nominated in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Into the Woods. I think that's what I know her from. She won. Best actress in a musical for Into the Woods.
That's interesting. Haven't seen Into the Woods as a musical though, right? You've just seen it as a James Corden vehicle, as a film.
No, I've seen the old movie version of it. I haven't seen it on the stage, nor have I seen the James Corden version, but there was an older movie made.
Really?
Well, the more
you know.
Which I think is a lot more true to the stage production.
Well, anyway, Joanna Gleason's got a very interesting chair, and that's all I'll say about that.
Very good. What do you think we recognise her from, though? Because presumably it'd be a TV show, you'd think. We weren't children of the theatre.
Nah, I don't know. I don't know that there was a movie before the 2014 version. I reckon you're off your chops.
No, mate. I'm saying, what do we recognize her from, right? Because she was very familiar to both of us, but she's in The Newsroom. Oh. She was in The Wedding Planner, Blue Bloods, The Good Wife. She also appears in Love and War, several episodes of which she also directed. ER, Murphy Brown, and The Outer Limits.
Look,
King of
I
the
don't,
Hill.
I don't know what West. She's from, but what I'm trying to tell
the
you
practice.
Is that there's no... Your whatever version of Into the Woods you think you saw doesn't exist, mate. There's only been one production of it as a film in 2014.
I might have seen, maybe I've seen like a taped performance of the stage show. It was years and years and years ago.
Why would you have seen a taped version of the stage show? And like because enough I to had... remember her from.
But, I don't remember her from there. I just remember Into the Woods. I don't remember her from there. I don't even know if she was in the performance I saw of it that was taped. I found the photographer though, Guy.
And
you'll never guess. He's a photographer. He is 75-year-old Patrick Demarcheleur. He's French. And he has shot for all the greats. Calvin Klein, Giorgio Armani, Chanel, Gap, Gianni Versace, L'Oreal. I could go on and I won't. But he's still alive, which is great. His birthday is on the 21st of August.
You love to hear that, Leo. I love to know. Did you know he was Leo from the date, or did it say so?
It's 2 days after my birthday, so.
So you know.
Although the cutoff is either the 21st or the 22nd, I think. Can't remember.
Well, those Leos, they don't go down easy. They go down swinging.
Hey, while we're on this track of looking people up, I also found. You know what's been bugging me? The woman who sells Samantha her dog, or like adopts it out to her on the street.
Yeah.
Did you recognize her as well?
No, I don't get anything from her.
Suzanne Cryer from Two Guys and a Girl, which was the original Ryan Reynolds show, right?
Yeah, Two Guys and a Girl in a Pizza Place or something.
Yeah, and that's what it was called for the first couple of seasons. Then they shortened it up. She was on that. Surely she's in other stuff. She's also a Broadway performer. Oh, she's in Silicon Valley. That's what I've seen her in recently. She's a hard-ass CEO who takes over from that weird dude.
It's really nice.
She's got a lot of credits. She's impressive.
To be in this exhausting mind map of you fucking piecemealing together bits of popular culture you've come across in your 30-odd years. Tim, one of the huge sources of conflict in this movie, and one of the things I think that drives a wedge between Carrie and Big before their marriage, is the stress and, general sort of exhaustion associated with planning a wedding. You have had some experience with this from the inside. From what I could tell, I'm friends with both you and Zoe, and I was friends with you and sort of in pretty close proximity to you while you guys mapped out your wedding day. And I would say that both the way you approached that time and the event itself were a roaring success. So my question to you is, where do you think Carrie and Big are going wrong? What's the cause of tension between them? And who needs to do more? He needs to do less. And, what are some things that they could talk about to maybe ease the stress for next week's screening?
They've got mismatch expectations of what this wedding's going to be. And do you know what? Despite the fact that Carrie's doing all the work, I kind of put this on her. She hasn't been updating Big about how it's been changing over the time. He is awestruck by the fact that the guest list has ballooned out to a staggering 200 people.
Mate, and why wouldn't he be?
He was supposed to be 75.
Yeah, down from 76, not one moment before. 76 trombones, yes. 75 wedding guests, no. What have you got against 76 wedding guests coming to the wedding, Anthony?
He's like, he's got a weird thing with numbers, you know? It's like when you're on the remote on the TV and the volume's at like 37, you're like, can't have that. We're going
so
to
you
40,
go?
35, maybe 36 or 38 just to get an even in there, but preferably divisible by 5.
Dude.
I get it.
I am so on your level with exactly how you described your reaction to those numbers. Like, always first option, multiples or divisible by 5. It doesn't matter if it's slightly too loud or slightly too quiet. In my mind's eye, I know that I can divide that number by 5. And so it's all good. If, for whatever reason, there's some other picky prick watching television with me and they say it's too loud or it's too quiet, I will acquiesce by going to evens. I would never, ever watch a television show at 37 volume.
Listening to something on a Prime.
Oh,
no good.
I don't know what it's like on your Android or Microsoft products, but when I'm using my my volume control on my iPhone or on my computer, it has to be an even... I don't go in divisible by 5 on that, but it's always got to be in increments of 2. I can't be 1 volume bar from the most volume. I'm either the most volume or 2 down.
Does Apple give you a number?
Nah, but they give you like, it's quite, the way they do it, it's done in like little blocks. So say there's like probably...
You can tell what's kind of a half of a unit and what's a whole unit.
Yeah, you've got like 16 little blocks. And so you could either be at 16, you know, all the way down in numbers of 1. It could be 16, 15, 14. But 15's just ugly to me. It's got to be 16 or 14.
That's a nightmare, Apple. What are you guys doing?
It's all good.
Make it out of 50. How about your customer base? The Android doesn't have a number. Windows does. And that would, you better believe I will have my volume set to an even 5 on the screen. I'll adjust the speakers, but on the system itself, it's got to be a factor of 5.
A speaker is no man's land. That's the Wild West out there. You can fucking have that dial turned at all sorts of crazy angles. I don't give a fuck. And
just as long as you've got your number situation sorted out, you could point that knob at, hey, chuck it at 9 o'clock, chuck it at noon if you want to blast shit out. If you're testing the speaker, put it at 3. But as long as on whatever digital display is showing you a volume, that's a factor of 5. You know, we're going to be okay. We're going to be good here.
It's so nice when you and I get on the same page. I think we can probably circle back to what you're saying about Carrie and Big's approach to wedding planning. Carrie's not bringing Big enough into the fold. Because I am genuinely curious. Yeah. You've got expertise, you know. You're a man who knows what he's talking about here.
So, look, I think Carrie needed to get Big more informed along the way on what was happening. I think Big needs to pull his fucking finger out of his ass and participate in this wedding a bit more than he is. And, that's Timbo's 2 cents.
Do you know when I especially thought that Big needed to pull his fucking finger out of his ass? How pathetic! I was just like really angry at him for not getting out of the car and going to the wedding. Pull it together, mate. When he's on the phone and he's saying to Carrie, "I was out front," you know, she's like, "Where are you?" "I was out front." He can't even jilt her properly. Make the fucking team. Like, either...
Here's what I love about Guy Alexander Halifax Montgomery. You are still in this as a story and as a film. I love that. You're still there. You're in it. You're still getting emotional at the Brooklyn Bridge. You're still pissed off at John.
I haven't had goosebumps at the Brooklyn Bridge for 3 screenings. But the... it's just... I don't know. He's sort of trying to have it both ways. I'm like, if you're going to jilt someone at the altar, do it in cold blood. Do it quietly. Smoke screen out of there. You do not get to play this thing twice. You don't get to be doing the jilting and then call the woman who you're jilting, or man, woman jilt too, or a man can jilt a man. You know, look. But just fucking have the guts to go through with it. He calls her up. He says, "I was out front." It's more offensive to sort of semi-grovel and be like, "I think I can save face here." Believe in yourself. Make a decision and believe in yourself. What he needs also is mates. He's got no one to talk to about how nervous he's feeling. He's got no friends, you know, beyond Carrie and the friends who are in her sphere. Like, he's got none of his own friends. Have you noticed this? The guy is entirely alone.
Yeah.
Harry and Steve are as close as he comes, and they're not even his friends. They're Carrie's friends' partners.
This is quite a common thing, I think, of men his age, though. You can quite easily, especially if you're in a sort of high-stress work environment, which he is, he's struggling to manage a mutual fund worth perhaps billions of dollars without basic reading and writing skills. Like, the man has got his work cut out for him every single day he turns up at the office. But when that happens and you get a bit older, those social situations sort of drift out of your life a little bit and you just don't prioritize it. You like having a bit of me time. You don't get that same value out of the social interactions that you did as a younger man, and your friends drift away. It's sad, but it's a common thing, I think, of middle-aged men.
That's interesting. I just think, yeah, I can see what you're saying as well, because then it's like, if you've sort of fallen out of touch with your crew, it's pretty tough to then resurface only because you've got a problem you need to talk through. Like,
fuck, you're man, not tell me about Big's crew. Who were Big's boys? Who were the big boys back in the day?
The big boys, you've probably got like a second string high school quarterback who still walks around with the swagger of someone who won a serious game. You've got theatre sort of Lothario, someone who they used to tease about being gay in high school, almost definitely. And so as a reaction to that, that guy went and had sex with a lot of the girls who he was doing stage shows with and could only confront his true sexuality, you know, 10 years down the line when he's 28. And he told them all, and they were all very supportive, but they were aware that they'd sort of alienated this guy throughout his formative years, and so they carry that with them. And while Big would do well to keep in touch and talk more about it, and, you know, this could have seriously been quite a good springboard to an even closer relationship, I think that that hangs quite heavy over his head, and he feels a certain amount of guilt about that. All the jokes were made in, There was no malice in them, but you can't undo the past. And aside from that, a couple of twins.
Some twins. Some male, female twins. One of each.
Two men, both pranksters.
Fraternal or identical?
Identical.
You have just described the most dangerous element that you could have in a friend group. Two identical twins who love to goof. Fuck, I cannot imagine the hijinks they would get up to.
Well, I want to ask you this, Tim. Can you imagine two identical twins who don't love to pull pranks? I mean, you are literally, you've been custom built in God's laboratory for pranking. Your identical twins. The greatest prank of all time has been fucking put in a bag and given to you on entry onto God's green earth. And you're going to spit in God's face? No, thank you.
You heathen. If you're not maximizing the comedy of your own split egg situation, you can get fucked and go to hell. And you can hang out in the ninth level of Dante's... What am I trying to say? Dante's thing. The nine levels of hell.
Dante's Inferno.
I'm trying to communicate. Yeah, perhaps. Dante's in this.
Our connection's going
a bit...
Is he by
the devil?
It could be. Our connection's going to seed, Tim, and I think we've probably got out quite a lot of good stuff. I've got more notes, but I'm just going to carry them over to next week. Or, I don't know, whenever the heck we next watch this thing.
Wise.
Well, then, thanks guy, so much.
All there's left to say is thank you very much to this episode's sponsor, Big's Boys. If you're a middle-aged man who's fallen out with the crew, give us a ring, 555 Big Boys, and
I would
you've got
love,
an on-demand friend service like
I would
Spotify,
love
but for friends.
To run a platonic, male-focused friend-fixing service. I don't have the bank of contacts in New York to probably get this thing off the ground. Like, it's going to take years of research and hard work. And also, it's quite a sinister thing to be making friends with someone and they go, we get along so well. And for you to explain, I'm only making friends with you so I can fix you up with other people who need to make friends. Like, it's a long fucking road to walk. But I would love that. I think, you know, my heart... I think Big is really wanting. Look, I'm opening up a whole nother can of conversational worms, or the same. I'm opening up the same can that I've already opened from a different angle. I'm going to put all of this on the back burner. We're going to brew up some
just
lovely worms
sponsor.
Next time. Yeah, thank you, Big's boys, Big's big boys, the big boys, giant fucking hands, sausage cocks. God, I love them.
See you next watch, everyone.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.